Hello and welcome to Journey of the Monkey King with myself, Quiva, and my friend MJ.
Hey!
So we are going on to chapter 18 of Journey to the West, and this chapter is going to feature mentions of rape.
Cool.
Yeah, I realize... as soon as I started talking, I realized I should probably give you a heads up about these warnings before we start recording,
yeah,
shouldn't I?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's kind of it's part, I guess, of the excitement of it all. You know, is it just going to be an animal death this time? Is there going to be a suicide? Will we have some ritual disemboweling? I mean, who knows? You know.
Yeah, sorry. I should really give you this before we just start recording. I apologize.
I'll forgive you at some point. You know, eventually.
Alcohol and drinking is also going to come up a few times, as well as mentions of the torture headband and the previous attempts to execute Sun Wukong in heaven. So, in chapter 17, Sun Wukong took up a job from a man named Gao to get rid of his son-in-law, Zhu Ganglai, who turned out to be a pig monster who imprisoned Gao's daughter. As soon as Zhu realized that Sun Wukong was after him, he promptly tried to get the fuck out of Dodge and flew back to his home in the Fuling Mountain, with the Monkey King hot on his heels. So, realizing he can't get away, he ducks inside a cave and pulls out his nine-pronged rake to stand and fight. And Wukong demands to know who he is and how he knows who Wukong is. So, Zhu has a 62-line poem about himself. So, only two okay. lines shorter than Wukong's own poem he had a couple of chapters ago. He explains that in his youth he was stupid and slothful until he met an immortal who took him under his wing. And
oh.
He eventually got a job in heaven. Tian Peng Yuan Shui, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, which is the Marshal of the Heavenly Reeds. And he worked there on that job until he got drunk at the Heavenly Peach Festival and tried to repeatedly push himself on the moon goddess Chang'e, and he was banished from heaven and reincarnated as a pig.
Okay, don't push yourself on people at parties, but also don't go to the Peach Festival. Never go to the Peach Festival. That's all I'm saying. Nothing good ever happens at the Peach Festival.
No. And so, do you remember when we had this conversation before? Because we've heard this story before.
Have we?
We did record, like, that chapter, I don't know how many weeks or months ago at this point. It's been a while.
Time is fake. Time is fake.
This is one of the guys that Guanyin recruited to join the pilgrimage.
Ah, now I remember. Okay. You still shouldn't go to the Peach Festival. I'm just saying, it's a bad idea.
So they have no idea, but they're meant to be on the same side.
Okay.
So Zhu calls Wukong a banhorse plague, and he says that Wukong has no idea how much shit everyone in heaven had to deal with as a result of all the. He said, sorry.
As a result of all the Sun Wukonging.
Yeah, basically.
That went on.
As a result of all the shit he pulled. And I want to quote what the next line verbatim, which is, Pilgrim, of course, was unwilling to be tolerant. So they continue to fight with the iron rod and rake. Zhu shouts at Wukong that breaking up a marriage is like patricide, to which Wukong responds by just calling him a rapist. Which...
Yeah, well, fair. Yeah. Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Or tried to attempted rapist at the very least.
No, he actually specifically accuses him of raping Green Orchid.
Oh yeah, no, that is, yeah, that's it. That's definitely rape, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
So they fight for hours until the sun starts to rise, and at this point, Shu can't hold out any longer, and he flees into the Cloudy Pat's cave and seals the door behind him. Wukong realizes that Zhu is not going to be coming out anytime soon, and he decides to head back to the Mr. Gao village to check on Tripitaka. And he reports about having driven Zhu away, but Gao is worried that he'll just come back as soon as Wukong leaves. And Gao offers to sign over half of all his property to Wukong if he can apprehend him.
Okay.
Wukong decides to start playing devil's advocate. He likes doing this, so he tells Gao that he's being very demanding. He says, "That monster told me all the work he was doing on your estate. All the wealth you had is from his work. You literally had a god working for you." And then, despite calling Zhu a rapist, just before, he now claims that Green Orchid, or sorry, he now claims that Green Orchid hasn't actually been harmed.
What?
Yeah, it's really
Dude.
weird. So, and Gao's only rebuttal to this is that regardless of anything else, having a monster for a son-in-law is ruining his family's reputation.
That's your problem?
That's his problem. And Tripitaka just says
Why are
that
men?
Tripitaka just says that Wukong's done so much work already, he might as well finish the job. So Wukong walks back everything and claims he was just playing devil's advocate for the laugh, and he promises to head back and catch the pig. Yeah, everyone comes out of this conversation looking badly again.
Yeah, no shit. Ew.
So anyway, on returning to the Cloudy Pat's cave, Monkey is able to easily smash down the door, and he shouts at Zhu for a rematch. So as they fight, Zhu breaks out another poem, 47 lines about his magic rake. It's a very important rake. It's called the High Treasure Golden Rake. He was given it when he became the Marshal of the Heavenly Reeds, and Laozi himself forged it, and Mars provided the charcoal.
Well, at least he didn't. Well, yeah, he got something out of the time there.
And so Wukong is unimpressed by the magic rake. He puts away his rod and he offers to let Zhu smash him over the head with it and see how strong it really is. So the pig obliges and brings it down on Monkey's head, which sends sparks flying but leaves Monkey completely unharmed. So Zhu is stunned, and Wukong explains that when they tried to execute him in heaven, Laozi tried to burn him with the 8-trigrammed brazier.
Not brazier.
Brazier, but all it did was refine his body and give him fiery eyes, diamond pupils, a bronze head, and iron arms.
I mean, that's still pretty good going.
So if you want to have the arguments about is he made of stone or anything now, he also claims to be made of metal.
Okay. He is metal as fuck.
If you want to complicate things even further, but I'm not, probably not meant to be, probably those terms are not meant to be taken particularly literally.
Fair.
At this point, Gang Lai has basically given up and just asks Wukong why he's here. Like, he's from the Flowerfruit Mountain. It's an entire continent away. No one's heard anything about him in centuries, so how the hell did Zhu's father-in-law get him to come here? So Monkey finally explains about his conversion from Taoism to Buddhism and his mission from Guanyin to escort Tripitaka. And as soon as Zhu hears about this, he throws down his rake and demands to see Tripitaka, finally realizing he's meant to be joining the same pilgrimage as Wukong. He asks Wukong why the fuck he didn't mention the pilgrimage up until now as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was busy, you know.
Guanyin specifically told him to be upfront about the pilgrimage because this sort of thing was going to happen again.
Yeah. I mean, he should really just wear a badge at this point.
So, Wukong orders Zhu to burn his cave down before they leave, and he demands to hand over the rake as well for safekeeping. And he plucks a few of his own hairs and he turns them into ropes to tie up Zhu. Zhu goes along with all of this, and he follows the Monkey King back to Gao's house. When they arrive, Zhu kowtows down to Tripitaka and apologizes for not coming to meet him, and he explains he's meant to join the pilgrimage. Tripitaka goes to burn some incense and pray to Guanyin before returning to deal with Zhu. He wants to give him a new religious name, but he already has one from Guanyin, if you recall. Zhu Wuneng, which is like Sun Wukong is monkey awakened to the void. Zhu Wuneng is pig awoken to power.
Huh. Awoken to power, I wonder if it's that's the best choice for that particular pig.
Well, he's not going to be called that much anyway, because he assures Tripitaka he's been a good Buddhist, he's kept a strict vegetarian diet, and he hasn't so much touched any forbidden foods. And he asks now that he's, like, joining the pilgrimage, that he be released from his vow of vegetarianism. And Tripitaka just says no.
Because, like, it's all right. Yeah, no, I've been holding this woman captive for God knows how long, but I'm a good Buddhist. I haven't eaten meat.
Yeah.
Dude. What the fuck?
He is going to be one of our main characters now, so.
Oh no, okay.
So.
Does he get any better at all?
A bit, I think, to be honest, yeah.
Okay, well. Yeah.
Tripitaka wants to give him a new nickname, Zhu Baji, which is what he's called more often than not. So Baji is eight rules, and it's referring to the eight Buddhist precepts forbidding killing, stealing, sex, lying, drunkenness, eating at the wrong times, dancing, music, makeup, and other personal decorations, and from sleeping in tall beds, which is... it might sound an odd thing, but it's kind of like, that's a symbol of luxury, basically. Having a bed off the ground.
More storage space that way.
So the new nickname is a reminder of his observance of the rules and a reminder to keep doing them. So basically, no, you still have to be a vegetarian, and I'm calling you eight rules to remind you of this constantly.
Fair. I can accept that.
It's a little passive aggressive.
It's perfect. It's the right... Well, no. Aggressive is the right level of aggressive to be dealing with this person, but I'll take passive aggressive.
So they have a big meal in Gao's house to celebrate, and Baji asks to see his wife, but Wukong tells him that monks don't have wives, and he drops it.
He asks to see his wife?
Yeah.
Oh my god, what?
He really does not get the fact that they hate him.
Oh. Okay.
Gao offers Tripitaka some vegetarian wine, but he refuses to touch it. And he says, prohibition of strong drink is the first rule of being a monk. And Zhu panics a bit at hearing that. I don't think he actually knew what the eight rules were.
But he's been following him perfectly. Yeah. He just has no idea what it is.
So he admits that he has been keeping a vegetarian diet, but he's still been drinking. And Wukong also says he calls himself a bit of a lightweight, and he says he doesn't drink very much anyway, but he also hasn't been following that rule. Which I'm like, okay. When has he been drinking, like, when has he been drinking... that Tripitaka wouldn't have noticed it.
Yeah, it's a bit...
But anyway, Tripitaka says it's fine. As long as they don't get drunk, they can have little a wine as a treat.
Do you think either of these people are good at moderation? From all that we have seen of them.
No, but in this case, they just have a glass and they don't cause a fuss. See, they're learning. They're learning to do what they're told, or they'll get tortured. It's character development.
Is Zhu in for some?
No, he doesn't get given the torture band.
Okay. I don't know if that's a good thing or not here.
So Gaoru tries to offer them gold, silver, and silk clothes as thanks, but Tripitaka refuses it. Wukong though grabs some of the money and he turns to Gao Kai, the man that they grabbed when they went into the village, and he thanks him for being a wonderful tour guide and for bringing them a new disciple, and he hands back the money to Gao Kai.
I don't know who I'm... Well, obviously I know I'm more pissed at the pig. But I'm not happy with anyone in this situation.
Yeah, that's fair. Gao still wants to give them something, and he tries to offer them like plainer clothes as a reward. But Tripitaka insists that the only thing they could possibly take is the leftovers from the meal for the road. Baji bursts in and he remarks that Wukong tore his shirt and his shoes are very worn out. He could actually really do with some new clothes before they go out on a like thousands of miles pilgrimage. So
tough shit.
No, Gao goes and buys him a new pair of shoes and a new cassock before seeing them off. And not having taken the hint that Gao hates him and just wants him gone, Zhu asks Gao to give his best to his mother-in-law, his great-aunt, second-aunt, uncle-in-law, and all the other relatives, and he promises that if the pilgrimage thing doesn't work out, he'll come home.
This better fucking work.
I understand, like, the obvious reasons that you're just, like, completely done with him and very pissed about this, you know? Being a bit of a rapist.
A little bit of a rapist.
And such. I do think, like, stepping back from it, if the pilgrimage thing doesn't work out line is actually, like, kind of funny.
It is. It is a bit. Yeah. Yeah. I can kind of picture Guy's face.
I'm critical and of the book's morality, but it is a well written book. There's a reason this is such a classic.
True.
But yeah, as they head out, Zhu Baji is given the job of pulling the luggage, while Sun Wukong leads the way with his iron rod draped casually over his shoulders.
Just gotta flex there. Just a little bit.
Surprisingly, that's not the end of the chapter. There's a tiny bit more. So after a month on the road, the three of them come to the Pagoda Mountain at the edge of the Choco Kingdom, where the Crow's Nest Chan Master lives. Baji has met him once before, and he explains this to everyone. And they meet, and the Crow's Nest Chan Master recognizes Tripitaka and Baji, but not Wukong, which annoys him.
Yeah, I can imagine it does.
So the Chan Master teaches Tripitaka the Heart Sutra, which is a real Buddhist sutra, and a full rendition of it is included in the book. And Tripitaka is able to memorize the entire thing from hearing it once. And the book says that through him, it has come down to us to this day. So this is kind of like a little just-so story for the Heart Sutra thrown in here.
Okay.
And there is some real historical foundation in that. The real Xuan Zang's translation of the Heart Sutra is still widely used as the standard version by Buddhists in East Asia.
Oh, cool.
So this is just a kind of a little historical, semi-historically tied little bit thrown onto the end of the chapter. So Tripitaka asks the Chan Master about the road to the West and the dangers they might face ahead. And he gives a bit of a prophetic poem warning them about the Rub Ear Precipice, the Black Pine Forest, and also goblins, fox spirits, griffins, monsters, tigers, wolves, lions, elephants, and leopards.
I am excited to see the goblins.
Yeah, I don't think the word, I think this is one of the things where I think he uses the word goblin in like a couple of the poems, but not in any of the prose describing the monsters they face. I think Anthony is a little bit more liberal with the translations in the poems for what like his choice of words. So
Okay, fair.
I'm not sure what goblins refers to. I might be wrong, but I don't think like any particular monster they face in the story is referred to as a goblin in the normal text.
See, I like goblins. I gotta say I do, and I'm always interested to see how goblins are represented. So I feel like goblins get the rough end of the stick in a lot of ways, and I'm done with it. Goblin rights.
He also says that they'll meet a water sprite ahead, and the pilgrims kind of take this as a test of the prophecy. They'll keep an eye out for a water sprite. And it also includes the line, "An old stone ape of many years now nurses over there his spite," which Wukong takes fierce umbrage at, and he tries to attack the crow's nest.
Yeah, no shit.
But he disappears into a beam of light, and vanishes. So left alone, the tree pilgrims carry on again. And that's the actual end of the chapter.
Okay. I gotta say, that was one of the more frustrating bits of this podcast for me.
Yeah, so Zhu Baji is one of our main characters now.
Oh. Good.
Yeah.
Please tell me there's lots of horrible slapstick things that happen to him.
Yeah, he is fairly he's kind of the comic relief of the group.
Okay, good. I can live with that.
To the point where from now on he generally affectionately refers to Sun Wukong as elder brother. And Sun Wukong refers to him back as idiot. Idiot is like his most common names from now on are Zhu Baji and idiot. Even the narrator refers to him as idiot as his as a name.
Okay, I think I can live with that.
And also, this is in Arthur Waley's translation, and in the BBC show Monkey, he's called Pigsy.
Okay.
To kind of, I guess, to go with monkey.
Yeah.
Which is Zhu mean Zhu also just means pig as well. Like his name is Pig. So Anthony Yu goes with not translating that generally and just calling him Zhu. And then other versions call him Pig or Pigsy. So take your pick of what you want to call him. Zhu Baji,
Bastard
eight
pig.
rules, Pigsy, rapist, idiot.
Rapist. Pig.
Yeah,
Rape pig.
reading the rest of the book is going to be very uncomfortable if we do that, though.
Yeah, it's true. That's very, very true. We should absolutely not do this.
But yes, also speaking of Monkey, the BBC show, in tar just to compare like the pace of that show in what it covers from the book, everything up as far as the Black Wind King is covered in the first two episodes of that show.
I saw you say that on Twitter, and yeah, just disruptive. I still haven't seen the BBC show. Do they cut an awful lot of this down, or?
They cut a lot of it. They cut kind of a lot of stuff, but they not maybe as much as you might think. They just kind of rush through it very quickly. Like when I say the Blackwind King, they go up as far as the Blackwind King. Like, the Blackwind King is maybe, like, I think, like a 10-minute section of a 40-minute episode in the second episode.
Okay. Interesting.
The first episode is, I think, everything up to Sun Wukong being imprisoned, and then the second episode is, like, everything up to the Blackwind King, including, like, Tripitaka being sent in the pilgrimage, meeting Wukong, the horse getting eaten, being replaced by the dragon, and the Blackwind King is all in one episode.
Okay. And how are we doing page-wise? Like, how many pages of this book have we covered?
Let me see. So, looking at my PDF here, the first chapter starts on page 132. There's a very long introduction.
Wow, okay.
An introduction by the translator, I mean, not like as part of the original book. And we have just gotten to page 464.
Okay. I thought we would have been a lot further in, but I guess not.
This is actually, it's kind of hard to give an exact idea because this is like a PDF converted from my like Amazon Kindle copy, which uses its own, which uses its own weird position system that's not based on pages.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be based on any sort of mathematics from this realm either. I do not understand it. It's location 1000. What? Why?
Hold on. Let me try something. Okay, I just copied the entire contents of chapters 1 through 19 into a text document.
Okay.
It's giving it at about 130,000 words.
Okay, shit. That is a lot. Apparently your kind of standard novel size. I don't even know what size a standard novel is, but apparently that is about 40,000 words. And I know this because this is a shit post I saw on Twitter shaming people for the absurd amount of fanfic that they read, which in my case was very well deserved. but yeah, okay. So we're not doing too badly. We're doing okay.
Yeah. So the entire first volume. So this translation is split into four volumes. So the first 25 chapters, it looks like is roughly 170,000 words. So multiply that by four, I guess. So.
Yep, that's a long ass book. Yeah, okay. I look forward to hopefully seeing the rapist pig step on rakes and various things in episodes to come.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay. You didn't write it. Did you?
No. Not as far as I remember. So, yeah. Please listen next time to find out what our new rapist main character gets up to. This is a good way. This is a good way to end a podcast.
It's a perfect way of ending a podcast. No one will ever beat this ever. We're so great. We're so great at this. There's social media show notes and stuff.